This is Packer and Durham on ACCN and SiriusXM Channel 371.
Chester Fuller, Captain Ron, Robert, Otto in the Christmas decoration room.
Otto's getting after it back there, man.
Well, I got to be careful with Otto now because he is back there with all the electrical equipment.
Right.
Which folks just think, they just see the basement. They're like, man, it must be cool.
It's awesome.
They got four cameras and 29 lights and all. But really, the heartbeat of all this entire operation
right over there
is on the other side of the garage, in the garage.
It's crazy looking.
It's nuts. You'd almost think this house was designed to be a television studio. But Otto sits back there with the $1 million, literally the
computer,
electronic equipment,
thing.
Everything. There's
right.
wiring and stuff all over the place. So He's back there, and between us and Otto is Amy Packer's refrigerator, which is absolutely stocked, filled to the top with all her favorite beer. Mrs. P will have a sud or two.
That's right.
That's her beer garden back there. So Otto,
be careful.
He grabs him one every now and then, just to keep everybody honest. All right, we're going to address everything you need to know. That's what we do on the program. It's now time for one stat per game as we get you ready for week 12.
That's crazy.
Of the college football season.
Blew by.
It's quick, isn't it?
Blew by.
It's amazing.
Yeah.
All right, let's start with Wake Clemson, right? Big game in the Valley. We talked about it in hour number one. Wake Forest offense, we know how spectacular it is. Absolutely spectacular is an understatement. They're second in the country in scoring offense. They rank seventh in total offense. On your mark, get set, go. They don't seem to care who they're playing.
Right.
They're going to score. DJU, by the way, has only thrown for more than 200 yards in a game three times this season, averaging just 175.2 passing yards per game. Big difference between these two tomorrow.
Absolutely. And you look, something's got to give, right? We see the number there, second in FBS in scoring. I believe Clemson is third defensively in what they're giving up. So going to be interesting, Pat. Can these Tigers slow these guys down at all? Can they slow them? Because no one, I'm not even going to say stop. I'm just going to say slow down. No one's been able to even think about slowing the Deeks down. 35, the lowest that they've scored.
35 or more in every single game. And even last week, you were up there in Switzerland.
It's awesome.
You know what? It was kind of a slow start for both teams.
Then 2 minutes hit in the second quarter, everybody score at will.
Wake scores 45.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what they do.
24 points were scored in 2 minutes.
Yeah, it's nuts. So we'll see. Can Clemson win a high-scoring game or not?
I haven't seen it yet.
I haven't seen it either.
Haven't seen it. Might.
We'll get into that. We're going to get into that before we get out of here today at 10 a.m. All right, Florida State's on the road. They're going to Boston College. The Seminoles have converted 25 consecutive red zone trips for a total of 150 points. All right, buck 50. The longest active streak in the ACC. It's the third longest active streak in the country. That's via ESPN stats and info department. And by the way, Florida State ranks second in the ACC and 11th nationally in red zone defense, allowing a score on 70.4% of drives that reach the red zone.
Let me tell you guys, when you have a quarterback like Jordan Travis that can move the pocket, is so electric, is always a threat to run the ball, that puts some major stress on a defense, especially in that red zone where vertically, not a lot of field. But when you go wide, 53 and a third, you're feeling really good about spreading it out, getting him in space. And as you just saw there, almost every highlight, let's roll it out. Let's move the pocket. Let's do something with his feet and then let his arm really deliver a strike. Dangerous if they get down there in the red zone.
The Noles have dominated this series. They've won 9 of the last 10 against BC. However, Phil Jakovic's now back, number 5 for BC. Changes everything. When he's under center, They're 4-0.
Yeah.
Something's got to give up. Both these teams, I think, are feeling momentum, right? BC's playing extremely well in November with their quarterback back. And if you're Florida State, humongous win against the Miami last week. Hey, they're looking around going, hey, we go WW, we're going to a bowl.
Right. Very possible.
Would have thought that after an 0-4 start?
Not me.
Only two teams have been able to pull that off.
Right.
We'll get into all that. We'll get into a deeper dive with BC and Florida State later on. Wofford is in town. They're going to Chapel Hill.
Terriers.
Yeah. Yeah. Get a check. Get your check. Go on home. Get you later. The Heels are 27-1 against the FCS program since 1980. The year only loss was to Furman back in 1999. Wofford, by the way, 1-25 since 1980 against football bowl subdivision opponents. Their only win came against UL Monroe back in 2000.
The Warhawks? Are you kidding me?
So Sam Howell, not sure about his status. He's still going to participate, I believe, in the senior day. We'll see what happens on that front. I don't think it's going to matter. North Carolina, by the way, next week.
Yeah.
1 week from today, NC State.
Yeah. I think this should be a good snapshot of the future. I mean, Sam, rest, get better. Took a nasty hit at the end of the Pittsburgh game. Do not, you know, even there's no point to play this game because now we can see, okay, Sam hadn't said he's coming back yet, so he might be the future if he does or doesn't. But, you know, just get a nice snapshot there of potentially Drake May and what he could be moving forward. It'll be interesting to see who runs out there first for North Carolina.
I don't think it's going to matter.
It will not matter.
No.
But it'll be fun for us to talk about.
Yeah, I mean, it'll give you, like you said, you'll get some new highlights perhaps.
Another number. Drake has a five-star guy. Committed to Alabama, decides to go to UNC. Has not thrown a pass this season. Well, that's crazy to me.
You got Sam Howell over there. You might as well enjoy it while you got him.
I guess.
Right?
I guess. Yeah. You got a couple blowout wins, though. Get that guy in the game. Let's go.
Well, I think you're going to see him tomorrow.
Hope so.
All right, Georgia Tech. They are on the road at Notre Dame. Tough way to end for the Jackets. Notre Dame and Georgia.
Have fun.
Play hard. By the way, through 10 games, Mr. Gibbs, we've talked about him a bunch this week.
Special.
He is a big-time talent. He leads Georgia Tech in rushing with 687 yards, receptions with 35, receiving yards with 474, kick return average 25.9, all-purpose yards 1,680. Since 2000, Gibbs is the only NCAA Division I FBS player that has amassed 650 rushing yards, 450 receiving yards, 500 kickoff return yards in the team's first 10 games.
So that there is an AP position on the first team All-ACC. If there is a single voter that does not vote for him for that position, they should lose their right to vote.
You know what else is great about him? You know he's going to touch it.
You can't stop it. It's phenomenal to watch. I mean, they know how good of a player he is. The defense knows how good of a player he is. And there's absolutely nothing – because they're so creative with how they get him the ball. And that's how it should be. I mean, he's such a special player. Don't just put him in the backfield, line it up, run a dive, run a sweep. Let's get him the ball a bunch of different ways. They do that.
But a really tough way for Jack. I mean, listen, they've been on a terrible losing streak here. And then you're staring at Notre Dame and Georgia left.
Yeah.
That's tough.
It is. And GT, it just feels like they're right there. Just a couple of positions, a couple of pieces. And in today's free agent market with the transfer portal, I mean, you can go get those guys. And it can be instant impact, but it's getting rough in GT.
That's what I thought was an important game for them last week with BC.
Right.
I mean, you get the 21-7 deal. You're like, hey, we're at home. Let's go close the deal. Get a W. Mm-hmm. Start feeling good because you know these last 2 weeks. I mean, you got to get real now. Notre Dame's sitting there going, hey, we got a chance to maybe backdoor our way into a college football playoff. We went out. They've got Georgia Tech and Stanford left. They can sit there looking 11-1 and go, hey, we like our chances. Yeah. And you got Georgia, the number one team in the country. I mean, who's got it worse than that?
Right, nobody.
The answer is nobody. Right? Nobody does. Virginia, Pittsburgh. We talked about this in hour number one. Beyond critical, right? Pitt wins. They're in. Virginia, what's going to happen with Brendan Armstrong? Numbers don't lie, though, if you love offense. Pitt's got 531 yards per game. Virginia, 518.5 yards per game. Now, that's, again, with Brendan Armstrong healthy, numbers are totally different from that perspective. But, man, both of these teams will get up and down the field, and they can score, and they eat it up like crazy. Virginia, by the way, only one sack in their last three games, giving up 7.7 yards per rush in those games. I gave you the other number, 1-3-4. That's the number of points they've given up in the last three.
Right. You know what's going to be fun to watch about that? Just knowing that number, the 7.7 given up by Virginia. Do they try to control the clock if you're Pittsburgh? Just grind this thing out. Let's just get it. Let's go to Charlotte, run that football. Abanikanda has been very impressive this year with what he's been able to do, his yards per carry, that offensive line moving guys out of the way. But at the end of the day, Kenny Pickett, he's a special talent.
I have more faith in the Pittsburgh defense than the Virginia defense.
No question.
Right?
No debate.
So if you try to sit there and we're going to play keep away from you, I think eventually Pitt would go, okay, cool. You want to play that? That's great. Because you're not going to drive 80 yards on 11 plays on
us.
But Virginia, again, when Armstrong's healthy, they spread it out. It's like, man, choose your poison.
Right.
It's fun.
I mean, it's fun to watch. Awesome. So many different guys. Big tight end, Jelani Woods. I mean, just a freak of nature looking guy. You've got Wicks out there, Keontae Thompson, and the things that he can do. It's a fun offense to watch, and I hope we get to see Brennan.
Me too.
You know, because That's what we've been looking forward to. I've been talking about November 20th. It seems like for 2 months, seeing these two quarterbacks go head-to-head. So I hope we get to see it.
Syracuse is on the road. They're going to Raleigh to take on NC State. The Wolfpack, despite what happened last weekend, losing in Switzerland, they still have a chance to get to Charlotte. So this is incredibly important. By the way, Devin Leary leads the ACC with 3.5 touchdowns per game in conference games this season. That's 21 total. And Schrader's been great, too. But he hasn't thrown a passing touchdown in his last two ACC games, 6 total in 6 ACC games this season. Advantage NC State in that department, even though Schrader can beat you with his legs.
Oh, yeah.
A 1-2 punch is a problem.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
It really is. But when you look at Devin Leary, I mean, undervalued by the nation, I think is fair, but was just on the Golden Arm, the Johnny Unitas Award.
Yeah.
How about 3 ACC quarterbacks?
3 out of 5.
And honestly, it probably should have been more. I mean, when you look at Brennan Armstrong, not on that list, you know, second in the country in passing, and he's missed a game. So it's an impressive way, and Devin has really just had a fantastic year. 5 touchdowns away from the single season record at NC State. He might get it against Cuse.
And that Johnny U Golden Arm Award, the 5 finalists, is Kenny Pickett, Sam Hartman, Devin Leary. You got Desmond Ritter and Matt Corral.
You like old Matt Corral.
I do. Of those guys are ballers.
Special.
Right.
Special.
I can't argue with any of those 5. No. They're all good. finally, Virginia Tech and Miami. We just got done talking about that game tomorrow at the Hard Rock. Winner gets to go to a bowl. TVD has completed 66.7% of his passes. He's been unbelievable. 14 touchdowns, 3 interceptions during Miami's last 4 games. Virginia Tech, by the way, ranked 2nd in the ACC in pass defense, permitting 186 yards per game. And like you said 20 minutes ago, it's strength versus strength.
It is. I can't wait to see that matchup. And really, I think this will be very telling of, you know, really just the future for Miami and how good TVD can be going against your biggest test statistically and what those guys are going to present to you. If he lights it up, I mean, it's hard to imagine what the hype train is going to look like going into 22 for Miami if he lights them on fire tomorrow.
Well, and who knows what happens with the coaching stuff, right?
TVD alone, I mean, it's going to be nuts.
Right. I mean, Manny Diaz, in my opinion, has really done a pretty good job when this thing was at 2-4.
I agree.
Now, there'll be people screaming, well, why were you 2-4? Hey, you look at every game seems to be like it's a 4-point game. Right.
And let's not forget who they play. I mean, Pac, Alabama, number 1 in the country, number 2 right now.
Michigan State.
App State only had 1 loss. Michigan State was number 3 in the country a couple of weeks ago, somehow, you know, behind somebody they beat. That's a rough start, a very tough start. You come out of that 1-2, and then, you know, they turned it around. They figured it out. I don't think it's as bad as some of these people are saying.
They are one of those teams like Louisville and like Syracuse that will look back at the end of the year, regardless of how this thing ends, and go, boy, a doink against Virginia, right?
Pick at UNC in the red zone.
Worst case scenario is you kick the field goal, we go to overtime, see what happens. But, you know, pick, see you later, lose the game. They will look back, Florida State.
Yeah.
Louisville, Syracuse, Miami.
We'll throw Boston College in there too.
Well,
BC, and that's more of a what if. That's not their
Djurkovic's healthy
type fault.
Yeah, if Djurkovic's healthy, even if they split October, they're looking at being 8-2, 9-2, 10-2. So, I mean, it's that thin microscopic line, right? Yep. We look back every year. I don't care what the sport is. You go, man, what it could have, should have.
Yes.
A break here or there. I mean, we go from being a 500 team to an 8-4 team, or maybe an 8-4 team to 11-1, maybe playing for a championship. Mm-hmm. But I think Manny Diaz, for the most part, did a really nice job salvaging what really could have been an ugly situation.
Could have fell to pieces.
Because at 2-4, getting ready to play NC State and go to Pitt, hey, they were looking at 2-6, and hey, this is a disaster.
Square in the face.
Right.
I mean, not even – it wouldn't have been questionable.
Right. And you lose De'Aaron King, right? That's the other thing. You lose your star quarterback.
People forget.
We will see how it plays out. Quick break. When we come back, we'll talk with Mike Barber. He's with the Richmond Times-Dispatch. We'll get his take on everything Commonwealth. What's going to happen with the Hoos? What's happening with the Hokies? We'll get on all that good stuff. Mike's a great guest. Look forward to touching base with him. Coming right back to you, Pack and Mac, ACC Network. Got us right here on a beautiful Friday, getting you ready for the weekend.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham. On a Friday, 844-SAY-ACCN is the number for the program. a number of guests coming your way, including Mike Barber, Richard Times Dispatch. Have Mike on the show a number of times. All right, Mr. Barber, we're getting right down to it, aren't we? Man, we got the Hoos, we got Pitt. Pitt's sitting there with the win. They clinch this bad boy, move on. Virginia's sitting around going, hey, don't forget about us. We can still win this thing at the Hokies next week. I got to figure people pretty juiced up in Charlottesville this week.
Yeah, you know, obviously a lot of the luster has come off because of Brendan Armstrong's situation, but I think people still understand that it's potentially a winnable game, even without Armstrong, although that's a bit of a stretch. And I think there's a hope that he plays. There's an excitement here just that, you know, football's kind of back to normal, fans in the stands. I think the atmosphere for some of the big games at Scott Stadium has been pretty good this year. But this is a big one, and this is the one that, as the team was struggling against BYU and Notre Dame, it's kind of what Virginia fans have been holding on to. Like, hey, it's okay. Pitt and Virginia Tech are really the games that are going to matter.
All right, Mike, listen, it's just the three of us here. Nobody else will know. Is Brennan playing? Give us the top secret news here, man. Give us the information.
Oh, I wish I knew, and if I did, it would be somewhere in the paper or on my Twitter, or I could break the news here on your show. But no, they're being very secretive. They're keeping kind of reporters at bay in terms of how close we get to the practice field. And I truly believe that when they say game time decision, it's the truth. I've been told that Brennan's doing a little more in practice each day. That's great, except I don't know what that means, right? Like, if he did nothing and then he's jogging, well, that's a little more. If he was jogging and now he's throwing, that's a little more. So it's a great mystery, and it's massive, right? Like, this is a different football team without him. I don't know how they get by Pittsburgh without him, but we're not going to really find out until warm-ups, apparently, at Heinz Field.
You know, even if he can go, and let's say he's 100% and can go, one thing that has to happen for Virginia if they're going to win this game is defensively, Mike, they've got to play better. They've given up 134 points in the last three. And while the offense is spectacular when he's good to go, man, it's hard to beat people when you know that, guess what, if we're going to give up 45, man, on your mark, get set, go. That's a tough deal.
Yeah, I mean, shootout is sort of the formula, I guess, for these guys, but they claim they're improving defensively. And when improving, you know, I kind of laugh at that because I look at the results, but they're talking about having guys in the right spot. Now, they really struggled with that against North Carolina and Wake Forest. They felt better about their assignments, their alignments in the last two games, BYU and Notre Dame. The problem, guys, they didn't tackle anybody. So maybe you're in the right spot. Maybe you've got the right assignment. Maybe you're in the right gap. If you can't get a ball carrier on the ground, I'm not sure what it's worth. So that's the problem right now, is tackling.
It's been a struggle. I mean, defense, you see the numbers here on your screen, guys. It's been tough for them to generate any type of, you know, excitement on the defensive side of the ball. Going back to offense real quick here, Mike, has there been any indication at all of a little more creativity with the quarterback position? Or are we, you know, going with a couple of different guys if Brennan is unable to go? Have you heard or seen anything there outside of Brennan playing?
Derek, I think it's the exact opposite. They feel good about Jay Wolfe, the guy who played against Notre Dame. He was a true freshman. They deliberately put very little in the game plan for that game, kind of trying to bring him along slowly. They believe he's going to be a very good quarterback, and he's going to be a Brennan Armstrong-type quarterback. They think he has a similar skill set. What they're trying to do now is slowly bring him along, adding a little more kind of day by day. As that game against Notre Dame went on, they added more to what they were asking him to do. I think that progression continues. But, yeah, I think it's a little silly if we think Virginia's going to score 42 points with its backup quarterback. That's not going to happen. You're right. The defense has to be better. And I think, guys, they need to find a way to run the football with the traditional run game and, you know, possess it and make it a shorter game if Armstrong's not out there.
All right, Michael, let's talk about the Hokies. It's been an interesting week, right? Goodness gracious, Justin Fuente out. J.C. Price takes over. What were your thoughts? Were you kind of surprised, not surprised? I mean, there's been all kinds of rumblings about what Virginia Tech was going to do or not going to do. They did have a nice offensive effort. Of course, everybody seems to have that against Duke these days. But your take on Justin Fuente, J.C. Price, and what do you expect from Virginia Tech tomorrow at Hard Rock?
Yeah, I 100% expected Justin to kind of lose that job, but I thought it'd be the end of the year. You know, I don't think it's great for student athletes when you fire a coach with two games to go and throw their season and their senior season into disarray. That being said, I think J.C. Price is an outstanding choice as the interim coach. The guy, as people have been telling me all week, he bleeds maroon and orange. He was an All-American with Tech, a defensive lineman, led them to that big win over Miami in 1995 that kind of people point to as what got the Frank Beamer program rolling. So he's going to do a nice job. He's going to work hard. They're going to bring energy. I expect them to play hard against Miami. I expect them to play very hard against Virginia. Will they play well? Well, that's been hit or miss all season, so I don't know. But I think the time was right. You know, Justin Fuente was supposed to be an offensive guru, a quarterback whisperer. He certainly earned that reputation. He's done great things in the past. He just never got it going in Blacksburg.
What is your thoughts or maybe things that you've heard on timing of when, you know, Virginia Tech will make the announcement or find their next guy? Have they given you any insight into that timeline at all?
Yeah, well, if we go by past history, they've already found their next guy. It wouldn't be proper to announce it at this point. I mean, if you look at the history, I kid a little bit, but how quickly they hired Buzz Williams, how quickly they hired Mike Young, how quickly they brought on Kenny Brooks on the women's side. It was 4 days, 4 days, and 6 days. Now, that won't be the case here with an in-season fire hire, but I do believe they have a candidate or two in mind. I do believe that they've back-channeled knowing that those are possibilities, and I would not be surprised they play their rival game against Virginia next Saturday. I wouldn't be surprised if Sunday we learn who the new coach is.
By the way, are we not sending somebody on the commute with Trey Turner on that road trip? I mean, that's one of the most unique stories of the week. Trey Turner, terrific wide receiver, because of an injury, can't really fly. So, hey, we're just going to get in the car and let's all drive down to Coral Gables, go play ourselves a football game and drive back to Blacksburg. Piece of cake.
If we thought there was any chance that Virginia Tech would okay that, I would have volunteered to drive him, because you're right. The only story, guys, I can think of that would be better was Frank Beamer used to send kids home from bowl games if they got in trouble on a Greyhound bus. And I always wanted to ride the Greyhound bus back with the players. It would be great color, no doubt.
I love that, man. So last question. I know you touched on a little bit right there, you know, before when Pack asked you, but do you expect this to really galvanize this team and bring them together, really play closely? I know you said, you know, we don't know if they'll actually play well, but we should see inspired football out there.
Yeah, and you know, I do want to say, I think they've played hard for Justin Fuente throughout his tenure, just not always well. But yeah, your point's a good one. And you know, J.C. Price, he is a Hokie. He loves that school. He took the players, his first act as coach, he took them to the shooting memorial on campus, and he wanted to remind them of their why. You know, why is Virginia Tech important? Why should you have passion? I don't know what his plans are for X's and O's and strategy and schedule, but I know that he is going to instill in them, hey, these two games matter. These two games matter to me when I was here. They should matter to you. They matter to the fans. So I'm expecting, you know, hair on fire type effort from these guys the next 2 weekends.
Mike, before I let you go, I'd be remiss if I didn't ask you about hoops, because the Commonwealth has really been a mixed bag after the first 10 days of the college hoop season. Virginia has really struggled. They got punked by Houston. Again, that's a Final Four team from a year ago. I don't think anybody expected a loss at home to Navy. And Virginia Tech has really looked the part. And, of course, that game next week with Memphis really feels juicy. But where's your take on the early stages of both Virginia and Virginia Tech in men's basketball?
Yeah, Mark, I think I'm pretty honest when I miss. And in this case, I was right. I mean, I thought Virginia Tech was going to be great coming out of the gate. It's a veteran team, a lot of experience. My only worry about Mike Young's club is their depth. But the way they should play the next month or so, they should be at the top of the ACC because of what they return. Starting with Keve Aluma, the addition of Storm Murphy has been outstanding for them. At point guard, another Wofford transfer. On the flip side, I think Virginia may end up being a top 3-4 team in the ACC, but it's going to take them a while to get there. And we've seen that before from Tony Bennett clubs, right? They get better as the year goes. They get more comfortable with the pack line defense. They find an identity on offense. You know, a year ago, we were talking about how they got drilled out in Texas by Gonzaga. And oh my goodness, this team doesn't look very good. They ended up winning the ACC regular season, albeit in a down year for the ACC. So I think Virginia Tech should be strong out of the gate. That's how they've been. And I think Virginia should progress as the year goes. So I'm not hitting the panic button yet in Charlottesville.
All right, Mike. Always a pleasure. Keep up the great work. Happy Thanksgiving and all that good stuff. We always appreciate it.
Same to you guys. Thank you.
You got it. Mike Barber, Richmond Times-Dispatch. And he's right. I would have volunteered to drive.
That would have been a great show.
I would have loved that.
Put a couple cameras up.
So come on,
talk
Trey.
A little ball.
Get in the back, stretch right. out.
F-150 back
chill
there.
Out. That's it. Now, you can't sit up front with Chester, but you sit back there with Fuller. I would have been more than happy to drive him down there. It's a cool story.
It's a little bit of a miss by us, honestly. Should have inquired about that.
Right. To me, there was two really cool offbeat stories this week. That's number one.
Right.
The other one was the Texas Tech Red Raiders radio network being a bit controversial.
They're out.
Ripping them. They got on double secret probation and can't do the game this week. But that's another network for another buddy's problem and all
right.
that good stuff.
That's right.
All right. Take a quick break. We come back. We got more guests coming your way. Connor O'Neill with Deakin Illustrated is going to join us to talk about one of the very best stories of the college football season. It involves the boys up there in Switzerland. Wake Forest. They're going to Death Valley and they're looking for the Atlantic Division Championship. We'll touch base with Connor O'Neill. All that is coming up next. Pack and Mac right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham. Here's Mark Packer and Wes Durham.
Packer and Durham. No Durham today. Wes on assignment, getting ready to head down to do Miami and Virginia Tech primetime game tomorrow night here on ACC Network.
We had a big game last night.
Yes, he did. He was there calling the Falcons, attempting to score against Josh Macri's New England Patriots.
Oh,
did not work out well.
Josh,
well,
yeah.
He will remind everybody. When Wes gets back in here Monday, he'll remind him
to talk about that later.
Of that skunk. That's what he'll do. Making his debut with us, Connor O'Neill with Deakin Illustrated. And, man, if there was ever a year to write about the Deeks, brother, this has been the year. Connor, first of all, appreciate you joining us and man, this has been some kind of special season in Winston-Salem.
It has. Seasons like this don't come along very often. The Deeks did have one 15 years ago, and they're trying to repeat that with a different coach and a little bit of a different ACC.
Have you noticed anything different just about this team and the way they handle business? I mean, when you're top 10 in the country, that can change some people. Have you seen any of that with this team at all?
I don't think so. They've always been a 1 week at a time, go 1-0 every week type of program. They have a 24-hour rule just like everybody else that they celebrate the wins. I don't think there's any joy being robbed from them in terms of like, you know, getting too caught up in the 1-0 every week mindset. I think they do enjoy what they're doing week in and week out with the exception of the Carolina game. But, yeah, I think they're the same kids, the same coaches, the same program.
Connor, it's interesting you say that. I just wanted to follow up really quick. And the way that they were celebrating, and last week, a huge game. We all know that. Keeping ACC hopes alive. But I had seen and heard some stuff that maybe there was too much celebration. It was too big of a game, too much excitement. I thought it was refreshing. Did you think anything of that? Did you think it was maybe, okay, you know, Clemson is next week?
No, I mean, Dave Clawson told us on Tuesday that he watched the fans kind of streaming onto the field, and normally he's the type of coach that's like, okay, let's rein it in a little bit. Let's bring these guys back in the locker room. He just sat there and watched it. He found kind of a place a little bit removed with his daughter, and he just kind of watched it unfold for 15 to 20 minutes, and it was a really special scene.
Connor, you mentioned Wake's magical run in 06, Riley Skinner and all those guys. But, you know, the ACC was different then, right? I mean, Clemson was not Clemson. Florida State wasn't Florida State. What Dave Clawson's doing, given this landscape and the year of the transfer portal and the six-year senior, and, you know, it's all over the place, and Clemson's dominance heading into this season, this one seems a little different than Wake's championship season of 06. Would you agree, or do you see some parallels that are similar?
Yeah, I think it's different. I mean, you know, we can get into the hypotheticals of whether Clemson was the same dominant power that they've been and whether that would make this more meaningful, what Wake's doing, and kind of set the circumstances more for this weekend. But you're still 9-1, you're still in the top 10 for the first time in program history. I mean, as good as that 2006 season was, I think the highest they got was, you know, 12, 13, or 14, something like that. So this is special, and it's, you know, you comparison is the thief of joy, but, you know, it is a unique season that they're having.
Connor, that they obviously are playing the kings of the conference, a team in Clemson that has won the ACC, you know, six straight times, and still an opportunity for seven, clearly. What is the mindset of the Deacs? Somehow in the world, a top 10 team is not the favorite, but what is their mindset? I mean, do they feel that? Do they feel any pressure of the Paul and going to play Clemson? Or is it, okay, we are the top 10 team and we're going to go and handle business?
No, I think there's pressure that comes with it. I mean, there's not only the pressure of going to play Clemson, there's going to play a team that really has had your number for as long as Dave Clawson has been in Winston-Salem. I mean, he's joked with us in the past. It's not as much of a funny joke as it's just kind of a dry sense of humor, but Wake played Clemson more competitively in the first two seasons when Dave Clawson was going 3-9 and building the program than they did when they've actually been on this bowl streak. That Brent Venables defense has always been able to defend the slow mesh and the RPOs. And I mean, some of these scores have just been downright ugly. I mean, I see this game from 2019 was something that we kind of thought was set up to be okay. You know, Wake Forest is missing two of their best receivers, but they've still got Jamie Newman. I think that was 52-3. This is everything that Wake has built their program to want to be, and they need to be able to beat Clemson in November to win the ACC.
What about Dave Clawson? Big picture. I mean, you always thought when Jim Grobe won an ACC title, I always used to kid with him. I said, man, you'll never buy another meal in your life in Winston-Salem. And you're wondering, you know, for a school of that size – in a crazy world where money means everything in college football and you got to spend, I mean, we might not ever see this again from the folks in Winston-Salem. And here we are, the only top 10 team in the league in Winston-Salem, Dave Clawson going to another bowl. It's almost become routine now. You should never take that for granted. But, Connor, how do you define the job he's done in Winston-Salem? Because he's really been fantastic.
I think what you first point to is – it's not always about making the best hire. It's about making the right hire. And I think that's what Ron Wellman did at the end of 2013. He found a coach that was the perfect fit at Wake Forest. He found the perfect coach for the smallest Power 5 conference school in the country, a school that has a stadium that only fits 31-5. And Dave Clawson understands every limitation that comes with Wake Forest football. And he's understands it, and he's been able to grow it and build it. And they've got these facilities that are just pristine. And I haven't been to many other college football facilities. I don't know if they're the top in the country, but I certainly have to think they're up there. I mean, everything about what Dave has built at Wake Forest has been, we can be competitive in the ACC. We can build this thing from the ground up, and that's what we've seen.
Speaking of the job that coach has done, and I think one of the best in the country, and especially when it comes down to the nitty-gritty of coaching football, his name has been tossed around a little bit. Is that a distraction at all? Has he addressed that at all with you guys for other potential jobs?
I asked him on Tuesday if he had any interest in talking to other schools, and he flatly said, no, he's just focused on beating Clemson. He kind of worked in a little, again, it's dry humor with Dave. He's got enough to worry about trying to beat Clemson. And I think those conversations are inevitable, but I think he's completely focused on Clemson. He is a hyper-focused individual. I won't say sometimes to a fault. I don't want to make him mad at me the day before a game, but he is hyper-focused, and I don't think there's any, if they happen to lose tomorrow, I don't think anything should be about, you know, Dave was too focused on talking to this school or that school about possible openings.
You know what is cool, though, Connor, and you're right in the middle of it, is when you see a school and a community buy in, right? And I think what happened last Saturday night in Winston-Salem, when you see the number of students that showed up, yeah. And again, small school, it seems like everybody knows everybody. It's one of the advantages, I think, of a school like Wake Forest, that you do know everybody on campus. And you saw everybody tied into it. And Winston-Salem, you know, they've always embraced the Deacs. But when you have one of these kind of runs, and again, it's my hometown, it's really neat to see, hey, man, how about the Deacs? And they really are the talk of the town, and they are the talk of the nation in a sense, in this unpredictable college football season. How's this tiny little school in Winston-Salem, North Carolina, up in the top 10 amongst the likes of the Georgias and, you know, the Oklahomas and Notre Dames of the world? It's really an amazing story, regardless of how this thing plays out tomorrow and even next week at Boston College. And who knows, maybe the first weekend in Charlotte for an ACC championship.
Yeah, it's just crazy. I mean, the student body undergrad is 5,400, and 4,500 of those were in the student section on Saturday.
Unbelievable.
It's great.
It's 80 to 85% of the students that go to the school are all in the same place on a Saturday night. Sometimes that's not a good thing, but on a Saturday night in the fall when you've got a home football game, it is a good thing.
It's a great story. Well, listen, keep up the great work. I know it's just had to be awesome following them, being that close and associated with it. Happy Thanksgiving. We appreciate you joining the show.
Thanks, Eric. Thanks, Pat.
You got it. Connor O'Neill, Deacon Illustrated, and it's been a magic carpet ride. It's we'll see if it continues tomorrow, high noon in Death Valley, taking on the Tigers, who have won 6 consecutive championships. And it seems kind of fitting that it comes down to that game, doesn't
it? That's right. Absolutely. I mean, you've got to go through the king. And I think Nick said the other day, you got to go into his kingdom or his palace.
Take the crown.
Take the crown, and you've got a shot. You've got a shot to do it.
And, of course, they're not going to give it to you either. It will not be easy.
It'll be a fight.
And the Tigers, one hand tied behind their back with all the injuries, they're like, okay, cool, we're still going to fight you.
Maybe a hand and a leg.
And a finger, according to coach, right? So we'll see what happens on that front. When we come back, we're going to discuss something that's right in Eric's wheelhouse. Offensive lines, the big boys up front.
Come on,
man, if you don't have it, you're in deep trouble. We're going to break it down. To the trenches we go. Eric Macklin will be breaking it down for you. All that's coming up next right here on Packer and Durham. Got us on ACC Network.
The Packer and Durham Podcast. This is the Packer and Durham Podcast.
Packer and Durham on a Friday. All right, EMAC. This is your kind of segment, offensive line play. You know what? It all starts with the big boys up front.
It does.
We can talk about all the pretty guys on the perimeter, sweethearts throwing the football, running back. But if you don't have the big uglies, you're in trouble.
You don't have anything. You got nothing. Let's talk about them. Let's talk about the top five in the ACC. And this list's a little bit different than what I had kind of preseason and who I thought would be where. But really, when I was looking at this list, it can't just be one or the other. You've got to be good at both. You've got to be able to do both and to be able to move the ball effectively. Number one, who else would it be? I mean, Wake Forest, when you've seen how well that they've played, Zach Tom, who's going to be a center in the NFL, has slid out to left tackle, playing extremely well. NC State, best offensive lineman in the country, big icky. Love their center, Grant Gibson, as well. Boston College, I think Boston College is the most talented all five. When you look at all those guys and how good they're going to be, what they're going to be able to do. Pitt, very experienced with the things that they can do, protecting Kenny Pickett, but also running the football. And then Louisville. I mean, my goodness, guys running in space. You see them on that zone stretch, just going out and finding work, finding guys to protect and to knock out. Certainly helps when you have an athletic quarterback like Malik. He makes you a little bit better, but all five of those offensive lines have really just been dominant. And they've moved around a little bit. I've had Boston College at one a couple of times. I've had NC State at one. But right now, Wake Forest is playing really well, has a great opportunity this weekend going against the best defensive line in the conference.
And I think the best defensive line they've seen.
Yeah,
right? No question. Totally different. And you're on the road.
Yeah.
Noise will be a factor. That comes into play.
No false starts.
That's all part of it.
Number one, you can't jump off sides.
That's true, too. You know, we had Zion Johnson on this week, who was really impressive to talk to, and he's a great player and going to make a ton of cash on the next level. Of those five that you listed, who was it in there in the middle of the summer?
So Virginia Tech was up there. Just because of the guys that they had back, Big Brock Hoffman, Tanuda, Lacidus, who just accepted his Senior Bowl invite. Really cool to see that. Clemson, you know, just thinking that they would have a group that, you know, was a little bit on the star power. You see some 4 and 5 stars and, you know, Mac Bockhorst, what is that going to look like? And, you know, of course, we know the steps that unfortunately they took back. And then North Carolina. I mean, having all 5 starters back, I had them at 5 preseason and looking at, man, they've got to grow. They've got to have great strength and go forward. And, you know, really just not disappointed is the word. I've been disappointed in those, you know, 3 offensive lines and what I thought they could be and what they actually are.
It's always, to me, it's funny. When I get like Phil Steele's magazine, I never read it when I get it. I read it at the end of the year.
It's way more fun.
I have more fun reading it backwards, if that makes any sense to anybody watching or listening. Because, like all of us, we have a preconceived notion of what we think would be an offensive line, a team, a league, a quarterback, whatever. And you realize how little you really know by the time the season gets underway. And then we get to this stage of the year and you look back and go, yikes, what was I thinking?
Right?
Good, bad, or indifferent. Here's a graph that I think is important. Sacks allowed.
Yeah.
Right? And as far as the big picture, top to bottom. Mm-hmm. And it really is kind of scary sometimes when you look at this number for the entire league. Because you just mentioned North Carolina was in your top 5.
Right.
Sam Howell's been getting hit a bunch. I know he's running more than ever before. But look at that number, 38 sacks allowed.
Yeah, and you know, I'm glad we're showing this because a lot of those are on him as well. And that has been my biggest critique on Sam since he's, you know, kind of been in college, got to college. He wants to throw that home run so badly that he is going to stand in there and he's going to take it. And unfortunately, he gets sacked or a couple of times, you know, he'll be scrambling out and trying to keep his eyes downfield, trying to make a play, runs out 1 yard short. That's a sack. That goes on your offensive line. And so that number, I think, is a little skewed. You also saw Virginia as the second worst. Now, that is an interesting number as well because they've thrown the ball 100 more times than anybody else. So, of course, there's more opportunity, you know, for sacks. So they're a pretty decent offensive line, too. I actually would probably have them at 6, even though they were second worst in regards to sacks.
All right, how about sack percentage? Because maybe that could be a bit deceiving because Virginia is the perfect example, what you pointed out. Here it is. NC State, 4.2%, the best in the league.
Yeah, and we talked about it. Those elite offensive linemen that they have, Big Icky, I think, is going to be a top 10 pick for sure. Now, he'll probably slide in and into the inside and be a guard. But look at those numbers at the top there. NC State, Wake, Louisville, Pitt. 4 of the better quarterbacks in the country, guys that can get rid of the ball, guys that know when they're in danger, they have this internal clock. Hey, I've got to get out of here. And I would love to have seen what Boston College number looked like with Phil.
Yeah.
And knowing that he has that internal clock, he's so mobile, and just the talent of that line, I guarantee they would be up in the top 3 as well.
If we end up, for argument's sake, don't say, oh, I heard Packer. No, for argument's sake, if you do get – the teams that we think, you know, Wake and Pitt are going to be in the ACC title game. Not a guarantee, but let's, for argument's sake.
Right.
Any advantage there? That happens to be the matchup?
Offensive line-wise or just in general? I think that Wake's clearly the better offensive line. I think they're more balanced. I think that they have a little bit more star power in regards to Zach Tom and what they do. But you're going against a much better defense in Pittsburgh, and they're going to bring pressure. So it almost balances itself out with the fact that the better offensive line – the better defensive attack, maybe not lackluster. I mean, they're top 5 with Pitt, so maybe you lean towards Pittsburgh just knowing that Wake Forest isn't going to bring as much as what you're going to see from Pitt.
And this is why tomorrow, when you have the 2 games that really could determine the ACC championship game, Pittsburgh, Virginia. We've talked about Virginia's inability to really do much lately down the stretch from a defensive standpoint. We've talked a lot this week about, does Brennan Armstrong play? Even if he does, Virginia still has a problem tomorrow with Kenny Pickett.
They do. They do. And I think that graphic that we've shown a couple of times now is so telling that they can't get pressure. You can't create any, and you certainly can't hit home. 1 sack in the last however many games, that is going to be a big time problem for them, because now you're just allowing Kenny to sit back there and absolutely cook. And we've seen him just light it up. So even if you have a chance offensively with Brennan Armstrong and they're able to score and go back and forth, you can't stop them. You can hope to slow them down, and maybe a ball bounces your way, goes off a guy's shoulder pad right into your hands, something. But that front and the fact that they cannot stop the run, 7.7 yards per a carry going against Virginia, I think Pitt runs it. I think we see Pitt be more balanced than we ever have all year going into this Saturday.
And the flip side down in Death Valley, Wake will see their the toughest defensive front, their toughest environment to play in. Yeah, Sam Hartman's great. Yeah, right. Those wide receivers are awesome. Yeah, the old slow. I'm going to throw it. Listen, the Tigers had great success. You just heard Connor O'Neill talk about, man, you look at the numbers of Dave Clawson against Dabo. It's not pretty.
No.
0-12 against Dabo. But this is not exactly the Clemson team we expected all season long either. But at home, senior day, emotional. Yeah. They're playing number 10. Wake will have their hands full.
Yeah, they will. And maybe I'm setting Wake up here a little bit for failure. I'm putting them at number one, and then what I expect Clemson's defensive line to do to
those guys. But it's strength versus strength.
It is. It is. It absolutely is. I would say this is one of the better offensive lines that they've gone against. And knowing, you know, not going outside of their assignments, understanding this is what we're going to do. We're going to move as a unit. But certainly a battle that is going to be so fun to watch. The interior and then those guys out on the edge. We have not seen a better matchup when you talk about looking at the NFL, Mario Goodrich, Andrew Booth going against Roberson and A.T. Perry, and then the X Factor, Taylor Morin, and whoever else just decides to show up and play.
And a quarterback that can deliver.
Every time.
Every time.
Every time. I cannot wait. You know, Sam will throw it up there, and he'll test those guys. It's going to be interesting to see who comes down with it.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun game. That's high noon.
It's a great weekend.
Yep, it's
a great
weekend. It's we start getting maybe again some tickets get punched. We'll see. We'll discuss that coming up in hour number three. Quick break. 2 hours in the books. When we come back, we'll get you up to speed in case you missed it last night. And if you did, Malik Cunningham put on an unbelievable show. You'd have thought Lamar Jackson's back in the league. 7 touchdowns for 3 last night. We'll get in all that stuff. We'll take a look at all the games. Phone calls too, 844-SAY-ACCN. Packer and Durham right here on ACC Network.
Packer and Durham.